Thank you for listening to the Radio Maria podcast on the World Family of Radio Maria Stations.
Thank you so much for listening to the Radio Maria podcasts. It's thanks to listeners like you who donate that enable us to continue delivering quality content to listeners around the world. If you'd like to contribute and help us keep spreading the message of Our Lady's Son, please consider making a donation. You can reach us at 888-408-0201 or simply visit our donations tab on our website at radiomaria.us. Your generosity truly makes a difference.
You're listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. We now bring you A Light in the World with Christine Rossi.
Welcome to A Light in the World. I'm Christine Rossi, your host today and every Wednesday here on Radio Maria. Well, thank you so much for your generosity during our Fall Pledge Marathon last week. I'm so happy to say that all my cookies have been sent out. And I know that a couple of you have already received them today, munching on them, I hope. I sent out those cookies and books right away. Now, last week was the anniversary of the Militia of the Immaculata. I'm very familiar with St. Maximin Kolbe. And my guest, Father Patrick Greenough, did a wonderful job speaking about the indifference in the world at that time and also in our times. But that's what spurred St. Maximin Kolbe as a young seminarian to start the Mission of the Immaculata. Well, you can catch the Father Greenough interview anytime. Just go to Radio Maria Play Podcast, Spotify, or Apple Podcast. Today's program is going to air again tonight at 10 p.m. Central Time. And then guess what? It's going in the podcast section. You know, EWTN and friends from EWTN are asking us to fast today. And I'm joining that fast on this feast day of St. John Paul II. We're fasting in honor of his memory and in honor of his defending the unborn, his honor, honoring him for his peace and stopping the violence. He was just too much. We're going to hear about him today. But you can do this fasting by giving up. Don't eat meat today. It's not a big deal. Skip a meal. Maybe don't have a lunch today. Don't eat in between meals. Give up something comfortable. See, fasting will keep the evil one away, and it'll be so good for your soul. Don't forget to pray and do the rosary today and lift up our prayers today to St. John Paul II. I always say it wrong. I say St. Pope John Paul or St. John Paul Pope. You know who I mean. Well, St. Maximin Kolbe was from Poland. St. Faustina was from Poland. And St. John Paul was from Poland. The movie Oceans of Mercy I spoke about last week was made about the proximity of these three wonderful 19th century saints. If you get a chance, go to Amazon, I think, go to Marytown Press and get a copy of that video. Well, my guest today is Patrick Nowoski. He's broken down 100 ways that John Paul did not just lead, but change the world. Patrick's new book, 100 Ways John Paul Changed the World, unpacks how just one life can affect the planet. The book isn't just history and boring, but an inside look at how he did it, how he faced down communism, how he faced down the mafioso, how he forgave his assassin. He danced in the streets with 2,000 youth in Milan. He loved World Youth Day. He loved sports. He loved people. We have a short clip now. I think Claire will be ready. And we're going to have this short clip of his wonderful voice. Go ahead, Claire, click it on.
Dear young people of America, what I wish to listen to his voice, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Open your hearts, open up your hearts to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God and is found Jesus Christ, the Son of God, Jesus Christ, is the hope of yours, is my hope. He is the hope of the world.
Wonderful. You know, when someone dies, listening to the voice, if you've saved their messages, and the one thing we miss the most is hearing their voice, this voice of Pope John Paul II, it's just so warming and heartfelt that I just wanted to play it for you. Well, with that being done, welcome, Patrick, to the show.
Hey, Christine, so good to be with you this afternoon.
This afternoon, yeah. Didn't you just love hearing his voice?
Oh, my gosh. It brings back memories. It brings back a lot of memories.
Oh, that's that famous quote, be not afraid, be not afraid. You know, we quote that so many times. He quotes the scripture 365 times. But I have a CD where he's actually singing the Padre Nostri, the Our Father, in Latin. And it was just so beautiful. I wish I could be in his mass with him.
Oh, yeah. I was actually a few times in mass with him. With a small group of people. So it is an extraordinary privilege to have met him five times.
Five times. That's incredible. Yeah. We're going to get into that in a minute. But first, congratulations on completing the Bank of America Chicago Marathon. I'm so proud to have you. Yay.
Thank you. Yeah, I ran Chicago Marathon about 10, 12 days ago, and I'm gearing up for the Marine Corps Marathon this coming Sunday. So I like to do hard things.
That's incredible. What discipline you must have. My goodness. How many miles is that?
26.2.
Ooh, Patrick.
But it's just,
you do but, you like know, doing it, discipline.
But, you know, it's just one mile at a time. You know, like everything in life, we train well, and then we take it one piece at a time. Looking at 26.2 miles from the starting line is kind of intimidating. But if you think, well, I only need to run to mile one, and then I get to mile one, I think, well, I'll run to mile two. I can do that. And then just keep adding and adding and adding. And it might be mental gymnastics, but it helps the mental preparation when you've got a daunting task in front of you. Take one step at a time.
I love that. I love that. And just so proud, so glad to have you on our show. I mean, you're an all-around person, not just an author and a dynamic speaker. And, you know, you've won so many awards for everything that you do. But, you know, you have to share with the listeners, because I already read it in the book, just how you went from a stand-up comedian to a journalist covering Pope John Paul in Rome. Please share that.
Well, I'll start from the beginning. I was born in Saskatchewan, Canada, and I was 10 years old when John Paul II was elected to the papacy. So you can do the math and figure out how old I am. But I remember that day because it was something different. I wasn't really watching the news, paying attention to the news, and we didn't have the 24-hour news cycle like we do now. But even as a small kid growing up on a farm in Saskatchewan, we knew that something different had happened, that there was kind of a seismic shift in the universe when this man, Karol Wojtyła, became John Paul II. And, it was around the same time that Elvis Presley died, and things were changing pretty rapidly. But when I became older, I finished high school and I started studying journalism. I got into college and we were having a talent night, and you know, I took the microphone and told some jokes, and it was in a small Benedictine college in rural Saskatchewan, and got a few laughs, and I thought, well, you know, maybe I do have a voice. And my mom had encouraged me to become a lector at Mass. So at 16, I'd become a lector. At 19, I was doing stand-up comedy. And then I came to the United States when I was 27. And 18 months after I came to the United States, I was standing beside John Paul II and attending a private Mass in his private chapel. And It was a rapid occurrence, a rapid series of events that led to that. I was working for the Marian Fathers in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, the ones who publish and proclaim Divine Mercy. And at the time, 1997, their superior general had been a student of John Paul II when he was teaching at the Catholic University of Lublin. So this student of John Paul became superior general of the Marian Fathers worldwide. So they had this connection with the papal household. So when I had the chance to go to Rome, and funny story, it was Christmas of 1996. I bought some raffle tickets at the Marian Fathers employees had a Christmas party and a raffle, and the grand prize was from their travel agent, and it was a trip for two to Cancun, and the new kid won. They pulled my name, and I couldn't believe it. I'd never won anything really that big in my life. But I remember thinking, I have no desire to sit on a beach in Cancun. I was single, and I was newly invigorated in my faith, and I wanted to go to Rome. So I called the travel agent, and I said, can I go to Rome instead? They said yes. My boss found out, and he said, well, we have a house there. You could stay there instead of getting a hotel room. And by the way, would you like to meet the Pope?
By the way,
I had that moment of sadness and silence, like, yes, I like that idea very much. Make it so. And he made it so. And I know we've got a whole hour, so I can kind of spin this up a little
bit.
Good.
But, you're fine.
September 30th, 1997, I was walking through Rome. My brother was with me, and we were walking through Rome. And we came to St. John Lateran, and there are pictures of St. Therese, the little flower, everywhere. And writing was all in Italian. I couldn't understand it, but there were TV cameras set up. So I kind of knew there was going to be some kind of mass there that evening. And it reminded me that when I read A Story of a Soul, that she went to Rome with her father, and she got to meet the Pope. So, and the backstory of that is, of my situation, is that we had been in Rome for a few days, and we were expecting a phone call from the Vatican to call the monastery and say, yes, we have a seat for you at the Holy Father's Mass. And so, if you were a priest and you were in Rome, this is in the John Paul II days, and you requested to concelebrate John Paul's private mass at 7 a.m. in his chapel, then they would put you on the list and they'd get you in. And if there were seats left over and you were a lay person on the list, then they would call you the night before and say, you can come. So every night, my brother and I were walking through the streets of Rome. We come back to the monastery. We asked the little nun who operated the switchboard if there was a call from the Vatican. And she, every night, no, signori, no, Paul, no, Paul. And well... Aww. Gosh, we almost gave up, right? So back to September 30, 1997, we're at St. John Lateran, and we say St. Therese. I ask for her intercession because she met the Pope. Here's my chance to meet the Pope. If you could put in a good word with the Lord for me, I'd really appreciate it. And well, I got back to the monastery, and the little nun came looking for us. She said, Signore, Signore, you're the Holy Father tomorrow.
And
guess what? Tomorrow happened to be October 1st, her feast day.
Oh my gosh, but, Patrick, that is amazing.
But that Christine, that is not the end of the story.
But yet more? Well, go ahead.
Like Paul Harvey always said, there's more. So I thought a couple more. Months later, that September 30th, 1997, the day the prayer was answered, that was the centenary of her death. She died September 30th, 1897. So not only did we see the Pope on her feast day, but she answered the prayer on her centenary, the centenary of her entry into heaven. So, you know, when I reflect on all of this, I think God had a plan in this for me to, in a sense, be John Paul's megaphone as I got older and after he's canonized and, you know, but that was the beginning. That was the seed planted for what God was asking me to do and what I'm doing now in reminding the world of this incredible saint. I think we get a pope like this, a saint like this, once every 1,000 years, that we have a truly great pope. John Paul II was seen by more people than any human being who ever lived in the history of the world. Nobody was ever seen in person more than he was through his 129 countries and hundreds of thousands of miles flying all over the world to proclaim the kingship, the lordship of Jesus Christ. And I said it in an article that I just wrote for Catholic Answers that he desired nothing more than for every single person to know and love and to serve the Lord Jesus. That was his heart's desire. And that was ultimately the reason for the new evangelization, because, and all of his initiatives, World Youth Day, the Catechism, all of these things, the Rosary, the Luminous Mysteries, were all to have an encounter with Jesus Christ. He wanted people to have that encounter. And these are ways that he used to facilitate that encounter. And that was the real genius of John Paul II, that he, and I think the real, if you want to say the secret to his success, was the time he spent in front of the Blessed Sacrament. I often say he downloaded Jesus when he went into the chapel in
That's
front
great.
Of the tabernacle. He downloaded Jesus, and then he came out and he gave Jesus to the world. And it was like he's peering into the heart of Christ and saying, hey guys, this is what I see. This is what you need to know. And he did it so eloquently and so beautifully in a dozen different languages. Actually, when he gave his annual address from the Vatican, he delivered that in about 60 different languages.
That's
fluent in over
right 12. There. Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
I know. It is just so extraordinary at every level.
Now, Patrick, you wrote in your book and tell us about the relationship that John Paul had with Padre Pio. It was so interesting in the secret that Padre Pio told him.
Oh, yeah. There are so many stories of when John Paul II, and correct me because I have the book here, but I'm not going to read it. I'm just going from memory that there are people who say, well, Padre Pio told him that he would be Pope. That's not necessarily true. Maybe that happened, but there's no confirmation that happened. But we do know that when John Paul was studying in Rome, he went to go see Padre Pio, who had already achieved worldwide fame, even back in the 40s and 50s. So Padre Pio tells this young priest that if you become Pope, you will lead the church into the new millennium. That is the most verified story of John Paul II and Padre Pio. And so, John Paul II was always forward looking. He was always looking forward to the next thing. And the biggest thing, I think that one of the biggest initiatives for him was ushering in the third millennium of Christianity, and taking the church into that third millennium was something that he was thinking about, I think, he right at the beginning of his pontificate. And he really wanted this to be something big. So you probably remember, for those of us who are alive then, he proclaimed a year of the Holy Spirit, a year of the Lord Jesus, a year of the Father, for us to meditate on the Holy Trinity as we get into the year 2000. And of course, canonizing another of my favorite saints, Saint Faustina.
I want to back you up a minute because I'm back to this Padre Pio thing, because evidently in your book, what you wrote about Padre Pio was that he told Pope John Paul, of course, he wasn't Pope John Paul at the time, that the most painful wound that he had, Padre Pio had, was not the wounds in his hands, but the wound in his side, or in his shoulder. Padre Pio had a shoulder wound that was more devastating than the wounds in his hands. And nobody talked about that. It was a secret. He never let anybody know, but the secret was given to Pope John Paul. I thought that was so interesting. And then Pope John Paul had...
Just piggyback you on that for a second. If I remember right, Mother Angelica had a devotion to that particular wound as well.
Yes, to the wound. And so Pope John Paul had a friend who had cancer. And so he went and he wrote a handwritten note and sent it to Padre Pio, which was hand-delivered. Mm-hmm. And Padre Pio said, you know, how could I deny my friend? 11 days later, John Paul. Lady was totally healed with her cancer.
And she was a medical doctor. She was going in for cancer, Padre Pio. And in these days, you have to remember, there wasn't text messages. There wasn't, there was not email. Letters had to be hand-delivered. We didn't even have fax back then, and Padre Pio died in November of 1960. So 68. So just to put that in context, this was in either the late 50s or I think it was early 1960s when it happened. And this woman, who was a medical doctor, friend of John Paul II, Carol Wojtyła at the time, was going into surgery for cancer. The doctors got her to essentially to the operating table. I'm not sure if she was actually on the operating table, but they determined that her cancer was gone. I mean, just gone. And this is a miracle of a Padre Pio, and there are many, while he was still alive. You know, we think we can ask God for intercession and have miracles from saints who are already in heaven. But, you know, when you have someone who's interceding, who's not yet with the Lord physically, their soul, and miracles happened, that's truly extraordinary. And they still happen, to be honest.
Oh, absolutely. There's a whole book of miracles of John Paul that I have on my shelf back behind me. But I wanted your book because this 100 things that you, how long did it take you to do the research for this book?
You know, it's interesting. I had a window of time back in 2018, 2019 when I was writing the book. And I wrote it for John Paul's 100th birthday, which is in May of 2020. I was writing about 5 chapters a day at some point where, so I think I wrote it, I think I went for about 6-7 weeks of just writing every day. And then I put it down for a month and I picked it up. So I probably wrote the whole thing in 2.5 months or so. And then the editing and publishing process took a little bit longer, but, you know, we got it out digitally during the pandemic. And then the hardcover, the paperback came out in October of 2020. So 5 years ago. And it's done very well. It's kind of a primer for people who are interested in John Paul II, because each of the chapters is a page to 2 pages of these 100 ways he changed the world. And it's not meant to be, it's meant to kind of be an overview of John Paul and what he did and what he accomplished and his influence on the world and the culture. And I really think I often say he bent history in the direction of Jesus Christ. And that was so necessary because as many of us, you know, that 20th century was the bloodiest century in human history. More people were murdered, executed, died through wars and famines and abortion than any century in human history. So, I'm working, almost finished another book on JP2 and Mother Teresa, who focused on mercy and the dignity of the human person. That book I'm really excited for people to read it, because these two on the world stage in the latter half of the 20th century absolutely changed the course of human history in so many ways. And we can't forget them. We just absolutely cannot forget them.
No, we cannot forget them. And, you know, so we're going to take a quick break. I found the beautiful song, Totus Tuus, and we're going to talk about Totus Tuus when we get back and about how John Paul reached out to the Orthodox churches, because that is of interest to me, that the two churches will come together, the two lungs will become one, as they should be. But, Patrick, don't go away. We'll be right back. This lovely song, Totus Tuus.
Thank you.
Listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home, we now return to A Light in the World with Christine Rossi.
Well, hi, and welcome back. We're having a wonderful conversation with Patrick Nowakowski. I hope I'm saying the name right. In his book called 101 Ways John Paul Changed the World. And we're going to ask you about Totus Tuus. When and how and why did he come up with that?
Well, while he was a laborer during the Nazi occupation of Poland during the Second World War, he worked as a laborer in a chemical factory and in a rock quarry. And during that time, he was also secretly a seminarian. And he read and reread many times St. Louis de Montfort's True Devotion to Mary and a plethora of writings on the Blessed Mother. And he started to ponder this. And, you know, people often say, well, he was devoted to Mary because his mother died when he was 8 years old. But that's not the whole story. You know, there might be some credence to that. But it was even later in his life, he questioned whether this devotion to Mary took away from his devotion to Jesus, who was rightly deserving of all of his love and devotion. And he went back to de Montfort, who said, no, absolutely. Mary always leads her children to Jesus. That is her role in the economy of salvation. And so he was, with gusto, became a lover of the Mother of God. And they often say you can never love Mary more than her son does. So, you know, Jesus himself elevated his mother. So we can't outdo Jesus in loving Mary, who always brings us to our Lord. John Paul chose Totus Tuus as his episcopal motto when he was appointed auxiliary bishop of Poland of Krakow in 1958. So that coat of arms that he has with the M and the Totus Tuus, that goes back to 1958, and that was cultivated during his youth, his seminary years. Always, and the neat thing about John Paul II is while he was reading all of these things and studying, he always wanted to read it in the primary language. So that's one of the reasons he became such a polyglot, if you will, learning so many languages. He's like, well, de Montfort wrote in French, so I'm just going to read the original French instead of reading a translation because I can get more out of it. But so I'm going to learn French. So he learned French in order to read de Montfort and other Catholic saints. So he learned Spanish to read Spanish saints. And he learned, of course, Latin was part of the language of the church. So he learned English was one of the hardest languages for him. And if you listen to him speak in English, you know, even during his papacy, when he'd done very well, he always seemed awkward in where he emphasized, where the emphasis was, or how to enunciate. I mean, for someone that knew all these languages, he did very well in English, but he always found it the hardest language to communicate in. So he often relied on his texts. But I always loved in English when he went off script because it was excellent. In what I think it was one of the first papal news conferences aboard Shepherd One, the papal airplane. It was actually several of the trips in. I think it was when he was coming to the United States. A reporter asked him, "Holy Father, some say that you travel too much," and he remarked, "Well, sometimes it is necessary to do things that are of too much." So he made a little joke. Sometimes it's necessary to do things that are too much. And so, yes, he understood that traveling was necessary in order to bring Jesus to the world, as I said earlier. But yeah, he had a lifelong devotion to Mary, back to your original question. And I think he in a sense reignited a devotion to Mary. I think he brought de Montfort back into the popular discussion, and he also encouraged the bishops during the Second Vatican Council to develop a document on Mary, but they later just incorporated that into Lumen Gentium, the other document, that one of the other documents that came out of the council.
Now you've prayed rosaries with Pope John Paul, and he gave you some rosaries, didn't he? Put them in your hand.
So I had five. Maybe I'll do this as just background. I had five encounters with John Paul II. Three of them were private audiences in his private his chapel. One was at the papal apartments at the Vatican, and two were at Castel Gandolfo, the papal residence. So I had the mass with about 30 people in his chapel, and then a private audience, a meeting with him after, typically lasted a minute to a minute and a half, where I could interact with him and just chat. Typically, I was presenting him with a gift. So those are the three times in private audiences, and twice in St. Peter's Square. One of those times I was just there for the weekly general audience, and I stood up on my chair. I was on the aisle, and he came around the corner, and then my hand was in his. And the last time I saw him, well, taking a step back from that, every Wednesday audience after it was over, he would bless sick people in right. wheelchairs, people in gurneys, people on crutches, people who are dying. And that would be followed by this beautiful group of newlyweds, the sposi novelli, they say in Italian. And I remember seeing that every time I went to Rome, and I remember thinking, I want that. I want to find someone who desires to get blessed by the Pope after we get married. And I met Michelle in 2001. We got married in April of 2002. 11 days after we got married, we knelt in front of John Paul II in St. Peter's Square, and he blessed us in our wedding clothes. And that was the last time I saw him. That was the last time. It was a beautiful way to, in a sense, say this chapter of my life encountering John Paul II close up is over. My married life, my life as a father and as an evangelist, as a John Paul II megaphone, has begun. And that unfolded over the course of years. And I will always be grateful for the opportunity that God gave me to be in his presence and to just fundamentally change everything about my life.
Oh, what a transformation. What a wonderful life that you've had since you came into certain priests, certain special people come into your life to just turn it around upside down and in a good way. I've had that happen. Yeah. Well, you know, how can people get this book? I don't want to get past that.
It was published by Our Sunday Visitor. So you can find, as a matter of fact, they sent out an email blast about this morning about books about John Paul II, and my book was the first one then at the top of the list. So I'm very grateful to that, to Our Sunday Visitor, for publishing the book. You can get it at their bookstore. It's on EWTN's bookstore. Had the chance to be on EWTN Live with Father Mitch in April and talk about John Paul II, Divine Mercy. That was a joy. So they have it on their bookstore. If you go to my website, booksbypatrick.com, and click on book, you can buy it there. And I will sign it for you, and I will get it out to you this week. So if you want an autographed copy, booksbypatrick.com.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you, Patrick. Hey, you know, I have a dog in the fight here, so they say, skin in the game, or whatever you call it. I was reared in the Eastern Orthodox Church and the Roman Catholic Church. My grandparents came from Antioch, Syria. And so, of course, I was baptized, confirmed, and everything in the Orthodox Church. But as I grew up, I went to Roman Catholic Church with my mother as well. So to me, it'd be my lifetime before I leave this earth, planet Earth, I would love to see the two churches together again. So he wanted to outreach to the Orthodox Church. Can you speak about some of the things that he did?
You know, you're going to have to point me to the page because I remember in broad strokes about that.
Page 64. Right? Actually, it was number 64.
64. Well, how about that? How about that? John Paul found that any split from the church, whether it was the Great Schism or whether it was the rise of Protestantism, was a rupture of what Jesus wanted. Jesus founded one church, and he split from that for any reason he found very painful. So he sought to repair those ruptures in even if they were just in little ways. Kind of a side note, part of this is that he became good friends with Billy Graham. Billy Graham, the ultimate leader in evangelical Protestantism in the 20th century in the United States in particular, and around the world. When John Paul met with him, Billy Graham grabbed his hand and said, "We are brothers." They really felt this great bond in the Lord. And likewise, John Paul II reached out to the Orthodox churches as well to kind of bring them in a sense. I think he understood that perhaps full unity wasn't going to be achieved in his lifetime, but he knew that he needed to start the process of repairing the break. And so he did that. He reached out to to Constantinople and to Moscow and to the Orthodox churches there to try to start dialogue, to have conversations. So, he would visit Orthodox churches. When he visited Turkey, he went to the Orthodox churches there. I'm going back to 64. I'm just going off what I remember right now.
You're doing great. He was in Romania, and he just was back. He was upset about the Great Schism. It like you say, he laid the groundwork. Other popes, Pope Francis, has also wanted to unite the churches, and I hope Pope Leo does as well. It would be a wonderful thing.
And I think one of John Paul's great legacies is that that dialogue continued under Pope Benedict, under Pope Francis, and I know it will under Pope Leo. One of the impediments to at least having some sort of unity, John Paul had a great desire to visit Russia. But as a matter of fact, when he met with Mikhail Gorbachev, Gorbachev invited him to come to Russia. And John Paul said, "I would love to if it was allowed," which some people thought, well, he's the president. He just invited you to come. But John Paul knew that if the head of the Russian Orthodox Church wouldn't allow it, he would not go. He understood that the history and the animosity and the tension that was there between the Roman Catholic Church and the Russian Orthodox Church. And that has been the biggest impediment, the Russian Orthodox Church not wanting to engage with the Vatican, with the Pope. And John Paul, I know, prayed that God would soften the hearts of the Russian Orthodox leadership to allow that. And I really believe that in my lifetime, God willing, that there will be more meetings, and there have been meetings between, if I remember right, I think Pope Francis met with the Patriarch from the Russian Orthodox Church. I hope that there will be a visit that the Russian Orthodox Church will allow maybe Pope Leo, maybe his successor, a visit to Moscow just to start this healing process that I think will probably take centuries to be whole again, in a sense. If not full unity, then at least cooperation and respect, mutual respect and dialogue and and maybe agreement on some aspects of our common faith. And I really think that because of John Paul's outreach and his tenacity and his desire for this, that this is, I believe it'll happen.
That would be wonderful. Well, John Paul, he had no fear. I mean, he stood up to the communists, and I'm reading on this page, on page 103, standing up to the mafia. So he even stood up to the mafia. He went to Sicily, he visited Sicily, and where they're mob controlled. And he told them, you have to stop this violence, stop this murder. And didn't a couple of churches have bombs put in them?
Absolutely. You know, he just got back to Rome from telling the mob to knock it off. And one of the churches in Rome explodes. A bomb went off and priests were murdered. But he was truly unafraid. And you know, that again, the tenacity came from his hours and hours with our Lord in front of the tabernacle, understanding that all things, everything on heaven and earth will bow before our Lord Jesus, and that he is the ultimate power of the universe. Everything has been given to him. And, you know, that's why I really think the phrase that Jesus gave to Faustina, "Jesus, I trust in you," is so important. Because do we trust ourselves? Do we trust our politicians? Do we trust anything? The only thing that's truly, fully worthy of our trust is Jesus Christ. And John Paul knew that. He was so convicted of that, that he had no reason not to be afraid. You know, one of the things that I think where he showed the greatest lack of fear was after he was shot in May of 1981 and recuperated, he went back into St. Peter's Square, no bulletproof glass, his security was beefed up, sure, but he was not afraid of someone taking another shot at him because he had given everything to the Lord and put his life in his hands yet again. So that's impressive. That's impressive.
That's
I think all of us, we can trust Jesus all we want, but if somebody shoots at us, maybe we're just not going to go out the same way that we did before.
He's wonderful. But one of the most important ways that he changed the world was the divine mercy. I think that was incredible. Do you want to speak on that?
Sure. So, and this is an interesting coincidence. John Paul, as young Karol Wojtyła, 18 years old, September of 1938, moves from Wadowice, where he was born and raised, moves to Krakow to go to university. And St. Faustina, Faustina Kowalska, was then in a convent in Krakow, and she's dying. She has tuberculosis. She died November 5th, I think, of that very year. So they lived in the same city for a very short time together. And then over the course of years after the war, during the war, actually, the Divine Mercy image and some of her writings were starting to get spread across Poland and out of Poland. And he was aware of that. He was aware of that. You know, matter of fact, when he worked at the quarry, he would often stop at the chapel after Faustina had died, stop at the chapel at the sisters to pray. And so he knew very well about Faustina and her diary and the Divine Mercy and the Divine Mercy image. So, but the Holy See had, during the communist era, put a stop to spreading any, for 20 years, I don't know, let me think the years, 1958 to 1978, they said, we just no more spreading Divine Mercy according to the writings of Sister Faustina, because we can't verify her diary. We can't verify that this is authentic, right? So, and we need to verify that it's authentic. So John Paul, 1958, becomes auxiliary bishop. A few years later, becomes the Archbishop Cardinal of Krakow. And he takes it upon himself to authenticate her diary, to start her canonization cause, which he did in the mid-1960s. And he ushered that through and actually put one of his top theologians in charge of authenticating the diary. Now, this is a humbling thing for this top theologian, because Faustina had 2 years of education. Not even. They say 2 winters of education. So she wrote like a little child, and there were many spelling mistakes. And so this very esteemed scholar is put in charge of this. And, you know, he felt it was beneath him, but he did it. And it changed his life. And, you know, it changed the world, because he was able to authenticate and bring this to the Holy See and 6 months and one day before John Paul was elected to the papacy, the Holy See lifted the ban on spreading the divine mercy, according to Sister Faustina in her diary. So he said this, I think it was during her beatification, when he beatified her, he said, for a very long time, even from the beginning of my Patron ministry, this divine mercy and Sister Faustina has been very close to my heart. And that God has given, in his providence, has placed me in the position to bring this message to the world. So it was very, very close to his heart. And he understood. I mean, if you look at what Jesus told Faustina, he said, prepare the world for my second coming. That is no small task. That is a huge, huge undertaking and a great responsibility. So he sees through her. Let me pick out here. Jesus also asked Faustina for two things. He gave them to her as commands: to have an image painted according to what you see, and that is the Divine Mercy image. And she had that done. She, through Father Sapochka, her spiritual director, hired an artist and painted the Divine Mercy image. The other was to have the second Sunday of Easter declared Divine Mercy Sunday. Now, of course, that is not within the realm of her influence, but she wrote it and she left it for the church to take care of that. And so when John Paul became Pope, he could have, in the day after he became Pope, declared Second Sunday of Easter Divine Mercy Sunday. But people were really scrutinizing him. You know, this was a Polish devotion. Was he going to impose a Polish devotion upon the universal church? So he waited. He played a long game. And of course, he promoted Divine Mercy and Sister Faustina. She was beatified, then she was canonized. And about 10 minutes after she was officially enrolled in the Canon of Saints, in his homily, April 30th, 2000, I was there in St. Peter's Square when it happened. He said, from this day forward, the second Sunday of Easter shall be known as Divine Mercy Sunday. And the audience exploded. I mean, it was like 10 minutes of applause. And of course, I didn't know Italian. I didn't know what he said. So I'm asking people, what did he say? It must have been pretty spectacular because everybody is going nuts right now. So he waited, and I love this about him. He waited until she was officially enrolled in the Canon of Saints. She was officially a saint. And then he could fulfill Jesus' final command to Faustina. Now, I also became friends with the two people who were healed for St. Faustina's beatification miracle and for her canonization miracle. I was working as a journalist at the time, and they were both very close to me. I got to know them personally. Maureen Digan, who is the beatification miracle, is still alive. Father Ron Pytel, who is the canonization miracle, has since died. But Father Ron, he had a heart ailment, and he was prayed over with a relic of St. Faustina, about a year and a half, 2 years, like probably 1998. And then his healing was documented and verified and approved by the Holy See. That was the canonization miracle. So Father Ron was in Rome with me when John Paul canonized Faustina. He also concelebrated the Mass with John Paul II. And so Father Ron also was invited to lunch with John Paul II and a few guests after the canonization ceremony. And about 6 weeks later, Father Ron calls me up and he says, Patrick, you're not going to believe this. I'm like, well, tell me. Yes, what? He said, at lunch, after the canonization, John Paul said this was the happiest day of his life.
Aww.
And I've often pondered that. And for my new book, I actually interviewed the person that John Paul told it to. It was Father Pytel's cardiologist, who is lives in New York City, one of the world's preeminent cardiologists. John Paul actually engaged this doctor in conversation and said, this is the happiest day of my life. I really believe that he said it was the happiest day of his life because he was able to fulfill that second command of Jesus to Faustina to give the world Divine Mercy Sunday and have it on the universal calendar. You know, before 2000, we celebrated Divine Mercy Sunday, right? You know, because it was a devotion, it was an approved devotion, but John Paul put it on the universal calendar for the Catholic Church. And that is a yearly reminder that we're in the time of mercy that Jesus told Faustina, that God desires nothing more than for the world to know his mercy. There's this ocean of mercy waiting. He said even the most hardened sinner has the greatest right in thy mercy. And that is an extraordinary gift to the world that, that John Paul brought to the world that we can't forget.
Well, that's for sure. And that's one of the most important ones. You know, we've had Father Chris Alar on several times and talked about divine mercy, and he's amazing. Like all the priests out there are. But the Divine Mercy Sunday, it's very big here in our area in Kansas and Missouri, which we're very happy about. And the bishops go around, and one church called Our Lady of Good Counsel is kind of like the church that has been devoted to St. Faustina, and her image is there. And that was the first church in our area to do Divine Mercy Sunday. So my husband and I have been following that ever since it started. Well, you know, Patrick, can you believe it? Our time is up. I've so enjoyed this conversation. Wow. You've led such an exciting life over there in Rome. I love it. I'm going to be following you. You got another marathon coming up. But do me a favor, please keep in touch with me about your next book that will be coming out, so we can have another great conversation. Yes. How about that?
Fantastic, Christine. I would love that.
I would love that too. Well, listen, we need to check out, and I want to tell you again, the name of the book is 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World. And you can go to EWTN to get the book. Can you get it on Amazon?
It's on Amazon, EWTN's bookstore, our Sunday Visitor bookstore, and booksbypatrick.com if you want to get an autographed copy.
Booksbypatrick.com. Thank you so much. God bless you. And hey, take care of yourself out there running, okay?
Thank you, Christine.
God bless you. God bless you. And everybody, this is Christine Rossi. It's time to sign off, but go be a light in the world. I think Patrick did a great job for Pope John Paul. And remember, if you can fast the rest of the day, it would be wonderful. Pray your rosary and thank Jesus for sending us that wonderful Pope. Bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening to the Radio Maria podcasts. It's thanks to listeners like you who donate that enable us to continue delivering quality content to listeners around the world. If you'd like to contribute and help us keep spreading the message of Our Lady's Son, please consider making a donation. You can reach us at 888-408-0201 or simply visit our donations tab on our website at radiomaria.us. Your generosity truly makes a difference. This has been a Radio Maria production.